Welcome to the weekend, and thanks for joining us on the Florida News Network for the Florida Roundtable. I'm Bill Mick, and you can catch up with me and the podcast of our show at BillMick.com and at FNNOnline.net. I don't know if there's a busier place for weather forecasters than the Sunshine State. The folks in pro baseball sent umpires to the Florida State League to learn how to deal with weather issues like rainouts and delays and the like. I also don't know what all goes into reading and predicting what the weather will be, but at the end of this show, we'll know those things. Our guest is Will Ulrich, a warning coordination meteorologist with the National Weather Service, and we're exploring Florida weather and what goes into understanding and being ready for it. All of that ahead today from the Florida News Network on the Florida Roundtable. Smooth weather ahead, or so we hope.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. That's 800-398-0651.
Are you sure we should be driving this thing?
Well, it hasn't sunk yet.
Is that the best idea, though? You've been served an at-risk citation. At this point, it'll be easier to contact the Florida Vessel Turn-In Program, or VTIP, and get them to remove it for free. If you wait till it sinks, you have to pay a removal fee and maybe even a criminal fine.
I don't know.
Don't wait until it's too late. For more information, go to FloridaVTIP.com. That's FloridaVTIP.com.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-240-4587. 800-240-4587. That's 800-240-4587.
And as we get the Florida Roundtable started for this weekend, welcome into the studio, Will Ulrich with the National Weather Service. Will, it says you are a warning coordination meteorologist. That sounds specialized. Welcome. Thanks for coming in. What's the title mean? What do you do?
Happy to be here, Bill. Appreciate it. Warning coordination meteorologist, effectively, it's my job to go out there into the public and work with all of our partners to coordinate with them and make sure that they have all of the latest available information from us at the National Weather Service office in Melbourne, Florida.
All right, very good. Well, as we look at things, first job I think I ever wanted as a kid, I really liked one of our local TV weathermen, and that's back in the days where they would take the sunshiny smiley face and stick it on the board, and then maybe a cloud and some rain over here. And I thought, I drew a weather map in crayon on my parents' wall in the living room. That was not a pleasant thing. What got you interested in weather and got you into this career field?
Oh, goodness. You know, I grew up in South Jersey, right outside of Philadelphia, about halfway in between Philly and Atlantic City. Uh-huh. And we had our fair share of bad weather, just like we do here in Florida, right? But South Jersey gets those interesting things called nor'easters. Nor'easters, cold tropical storms, if you will. Well, sometimes they're accompanied by really heavy snow. And I'll never forget back in March of 1993, we should be familiar, those of you who live in Florida should be familiar with that storm as well, because that was considered the March 1993 superstorm. It meant a little bit different things for us up in New Jersey. We had a huge snowstorm and ice storm that accompanied that system. And I'll never forget seeing the gradient in how much our neighborhoods around where I lived got different totals of snowfall. And it fascinated me that you could just be 10, 15 miles down the road and get a completely different type of weather. Because we had what's called the rain snow line up in New Jersey, where some days it snows if you were on the cold side, some days it rains. And that could make all the difference between a school day and having a snow day.
Yeah, so, snow days are good, yeah.
You know, I would pay attention to that as a kid. And since I was interested in meteorology, you know, that just sparked my interest.
Speaking of, I've got a friend actually worked for my dad. They both worked at the phone company, and they were in engineering there together. But he, part-time like I was in the Air National Guard, and he was in the weather flight, and he was a meteorologist there. I used to stop by his office and look at, of course, maps laid out all over, tables and whatnot, and a lot of work going on. What kind of training goes into being ready to do what you do with weather?
Sure. For me, you know, right here, I'm a local boy here to the Melbourne area. I went to Florida Institute of Technology, so I've been in the community here since 2004, so I'm intimately familiar with East Central Florida weather. But, you know, before that, I had to get my bachelor's and my master's degree in meteorology. At a minimum, I'd say to be a meteorologist, you need that four-year degree, bachelor's of science. Mm-hmm. That's really heavy on the mathematics and the physics side of the house. So if you're inclined to enjoy science and math, meteorology is right up your alley.
Is there a certification board or someone that, I don't know, tests meteorologists and says, okay, you're ready to go?
So not at the at the National Weather Service, I should say. Basically, the certificate, the Bachelor's of Science is your ticket,
sure.
You know,
okay.
But a lot of the folks that you see on television, if they don't have formal four-year training in meteorology, they become certified in meteorology through the American Meteorological Society. They have a board that does certify on-air meteorologists for those who don't have a four-year bachelor degree. But I'll tell you,
I always wondered about the classification for the TV meteorologist versus
somebody
who does what you do.
There are many on-air meteorologists that have a four-year degree in meteorology, so I don't want to discredit that at all.
Oh, no.
But there are folks who just have been in the biz for so long that they can go ahead and say, you know what, I want to do weather. In order to do that, the AMS can give me a certificate and I can know a little bit more than, you know, others that might be on air.
What's the biggest challenge you face daily taking a look at the weather?
We're coming up on that time of season. I'd say the middle of May through the middle of October. As you know, Bill, we've got basically two seasons here, the warm and wet and the cool and dry. And we're just a couple months away from that warm and wet season where we get those daily afternoon showers and thunderstorms. Where exactly they're going to set up, how impactful they're going to be, that's always a challenge every single day for us at the National Weather Service.
How long have you been in the weather game, Will?
Oh, goodness. Officially, since 2008 when I got my four-year degree in meteorology.
And more ahead on the Florida Roundtable. Stay with us.
David was in big trouble with the IRS.
At first, I didn't owe that much, but after this year, it was out of control.
Then David called Get a Tax Lawyer.
Right away, they were like, oh yeah, looks like you're qualified to save.
Get a Tax Lawyer went to work.
Should have called way sooner.
Get a Tax Lawyer has helped thousands like David fight the IRS and get a fresh start.
Call 800-786-9014. That's 800-786-9014.
Looking to make your garden fresh and new this spring? Quality Green Specialists in DeLand has what you're looking for. Fancy shrubs, large trees like magnolias and hollies, beautiful flowers like super petunias and azaleas, olives, citrus, peaches, blueberries, vegetables, and herbs too. Enjoy gardening at its best. Select from our quality fertilizers and organics like Azomite. Great plants, sustainable products. Friendly expert advice. 335 West Michigan Avenue, DeLand, and online at qualitygreenspecialist.com.
Hello, I'm Hector Elizondo, Emmy Award-winning actor, and I want to talk to you about getting older. My body hurts, my joints ache, and sometimes I forget.
I forget that doing all your own scenes for a movie isn't always the best decision. Especially when you're galloping side saddle down a countryside road on a horse named Archibello, who seems to have only one speed, high. And pulling on his reins only seems to encourage him to go even faster. So, of course, my body hurts and my joints ache, but it's not because of my age. It's because I'm living my life. Oh, Archibello!
Don't let life pass you by. Take care of your brain health. It may just help you stay on top of your game.
As soon as this scene wraps, I'm going to kiss the ground, thank Archibella for his outstanding performance, feed him a carrot, and visit brainhealth.gov.
Find out how you can make the most of your brain as you age at brainhealth.gov.
If you're in Florida, you're concerned about the weather, you're here for vacation, you live here, you want to know what the weather's going to be, and I don't know anybody that gets as much guff as, say, a used car salesman than weather guys do. Will Ulrich is with us. He's with the National Weather Service. He is a warning coordination meteorologist, and he was telling us about that earlier. Well, we've talked about education, what it takes to get into the field, and you've been in it a while. The daily observations and the conclusions you come to, I can imagine that's changed through the years as you've done this job. What's involved in your daily look at the weather?
That's a great point. So we have about 20 folks at the National Weather Service office in Melbourne. Again, there's other weather forecast offices that cover the state. That includes Jacksonville, Tallahassee, Miami, Tampa, and Key West. And so they're all basically families of meteorologists that are intimately familiar with the weather in our community. But before we can even tell you what's going to happen, we have to observe. And that's kind of the question that you ask. How has that changed through the years? Observations are a critical part in the forecasting process, because if we don't understand what is happening now, how on earth are we going to be able to try to tell you what's going to happen one day from now, five days from now, let alone 1 hour from now? We have to have a good idea of what's happening in our backyard, and we have a ton of tools that we can use to kind of get a feel for what's happening out there outside of our door and within our community as a whole in East Central Florida.
Do the trends nationally, do they translate, do they impact what goes on in a specific area? Different weather, different parts of the country. So do you get to watch those trends and see what it's likely to bring? And do you have a table of information or a database of information that says, when this has happened before, this has happened right after it, generally? How does that work?
Sure. You know, part of the observation piece is not just looking at what's happening in your backyard. It's looking downstream and upstream. In other words, to the west and to the east, or depending where the system's from, those terms might change. We have to look to the west this time of year because most of the weather that we experience here in the state of Florida comes at us from the west. We think of storms that impact California, New Mexico, the desert southwest. If a low pressure system impacts those communities, within about 3 or 4 days, it might be right here over Florida. But we can track that system using satellite and radar days in advance. In fact, we can see low pressure systems halfway around the globe. And with time, we can see those features. They may change, but those features will eventually somehow impact our weather here. It's all part of what's known as teleconnections. Everything in the atmosphere, because we're a closed system, the planet Earth is a closed system, right? We can track things all around the world. And depending on what happens on one side of the planet, the exact opposite might be happening on the other side. Those are known as teleconnections. And we use those teleconnections as a way to see what big pattern changes might occur in the atmosphere. What you mentioned earlier were analogs, looking back in the past. Hey, we saw a similar setup back in 1993 or 1996. While the weather might not exactly play out the same, we can take hints from the past, from history, to get an idea of what might happen this upcoming storm system.
What are the daily things that may impact the weather locally for anybody, wherever they are, the kind of things you look at there?
It's complicated. And honestly, we could spend all day, but I know we've only got an hour show, right? So fact is, we've got, you know, a multitude of factors here in Central Florida that can impact our weather. Whether you're talking about the ocean versus the land, because the ocean heats differently than the land surface does. The air over it heats differently. Lakes versus streams versus urban areas versus suburban areas. We have, of course, a lot of development occurring all across the state of Florida, and so they behave differently as well, because that changes the way in which the sun heats those areas in the state of Florida, and that has impacts on circulations and winds all over the state, and then subsequently, how much moisture is there? Another factor that is key into getting clouds and rainfall is how much atmospheric moisture is present. So we're looking at how much daytime heating is going to occur, how much moisture is out there, what the prevailing winds are. Those are three primary factors that we use in forecasting the weather, especially during the wet season, which again, for the state of Florida as a whole, when we get those showers and thunderstorms every afternoon, typically is between May and October.
You were telling me earlier that this is this time of year is particularly treacherous, I guess would be a good word. Severe weather more likely this time of year?
Yeah, so the Florida Peninsula, right? We have two seasons. I grew up in South Jersey. Where did you grow up, Bill?
West Virginia.
West Virginia. You get it. Four seasons up there, right?
Exactly.
So down here in Florida, we don't have four seasons. We have two seasons, the warm and wet, which again, we're used to, middle of May through the middle of October. And the cool and dry, which we're still in right here now in the month of March, and that's going to continue through at least May. The cool and dry season is exactly that. It's a little bit cooler, and it's considerably drier. The warm and wet season is a five-month period that runs from the middle of May through the middle of October, for the most part, for the central part of the peninsula. It does vary across the state. Those 5 months, less than half a year, we get two-thirds of our annual rainfall.
Wow.
So that's why I call it the warm and wet season.
Sure.
The cool and dry season, which we're in now, which is a seven-month period, that's marked by less rainfall. But when it does rain, it's generally because of a larger storm system, like a low pressure or a cold front. With those systems, we can see more impactful weather in terms of significant wind events, hail events, and tornado events. And I won't get into all the specifics again because we could be here all day, Bill, but there's this phenomena in the central and eastern Pacific Ocean known as El Nino. It's part of the El Nino Southern Oscillation Index. When those water temperatures in that part of the world are warmer than usual, that can impact our weather here in Central Florida. People are probably have heard that before because it impacts hurricane season in the Atlantic Ocean, but El Nino can impact our weather even during the dry season or the cool season here in Florida, and that can increase our threat of severe weather.
The other we hear is La Nina,
which is the opposite of El Nino. So El Nino is when water temperatures are warmer than usual in the Pacific, central and eastern Pacific near the equator. La Nina is when temperatures are cooler than normal. The key being than normal. Of course, the water temperatures near the equator are always warm, right? Because the sun's beating down on that year round. But when water temperatures are cooler than normal, that's La Nina. When they're warmer than normal, that's El Nino. And right now we're still shaking off what was a pretty strong El Nino this winter.
And that impacts us in what manner?
El Nino enhances the amount of thunderstorm activity over the central and eastern Pacific Ocean during the winter months. And you think to yourself, wait, why is Will talking about something that's thousands of miles away? Well, because of that thunderstorm activity, because of that very warm water, that impacts global circulations. Circulations basically just means wind patterns. What that does over the southern tier of the United States, from California all the way to the Gulf of Mexico and the state of Florida, it enhances the subtropical jet stream. Everybody's probably heard of the jet stream before, 20, 30, 40,000 feet in the atmosphere, where we fly, commercial airliners,
sure.
Right? Those winds typically are always stronger than what we have down on the ground. But during El Nino winters, that convection way away from the state of Florida impacts the jet stream that parks itself over us during this time of year. And that can enhance the threat of severe weather because that jet stream often has a lot of energy with it and also has a lot of moisture with it because that jet stream is coming at us from the Pacific Ocean. You might have heard before of atmospheric river events on the west coast of the United States or the Pineapple Express, as it's sometimes called. That's the Pacific subtropical jet stream. Well, it gets a little bit further south and parks itself over the Gulf of Mexico and Florida during El Nino winters. And that's exactly what we saw this winter. Folks in the state of Florida probably noticed back in November, December, and January how cloudy and cool to an extent, right? How cool it was this winter. You can thank El Nino for that.
Now, you also told me that we are more prone to tornadoes, that kind of activity, during this particular time of year.
El Nino is one of those things that, again, because of that Pacific jet stream, enhances the amount of energy in the atmosphere. And tornadoes want to feed off of that energy. The technical term, the meteorological term, is wind shear, the changing of wind speed and direction with height. So as that wind shear increases, in part thanks to the subtropical jet, which is enhanced because of El Nino, when there are storm systems over the state of Florida, we can see more tornadoes. And that is what we have seen so far this year. since October 1st, we have seen lots of tornadoes over the Florida Peninsula. Maybe not locally in your community, but as the state as a whole, we've recorded 34 tornadoes since October 1. And typically, from October 1 till about now, we only get somewhere between 15 and 20 tornadoes. So it's not to say we don't get...
So potentially double.
Double. Almost wow. Double. Yeah, which is significant, right?
Sure it is.
It's supposed to storm during the winter, right?
We just would think so.
Yeah. Just less so.
Right.
But when El Nino is around, we get more storms and more potential for severe weather. That's the key.
Maybe stepping outside weather for just a second, but those events will also impact fire season in a state like ours.
True. El Nino doesn't just impact the dry season. It also impacts the transition from the dry season to the wet season. Again, we have two seasons, so we have to transition in and out of them, right? Well, around May, late April into early parts of May, we transition out of the dry season and into the wet season, and El Nino can impact that. Everybody has been talking about 1998. That was a significant wildfire season for...
It's when I moved here, absolutely.
Okay, so yeah. You remember it. We had significant wildfires, particularly in central Florida, Flagler County, Volusia County, had mm-hmm. significant fire concerns. It's too early, and it would be inappropriate for me to say that this is going to be another 1998 because there have been other El Nino transitions in previous years, 62, 63, 57, 58, 1997, 1998, 2015, 2016, where things like that, what happened in 1998, didn't occur.
Right.
So it's too early for us to say how it's going to impact our weather in April and May. But nonetheless, if we stay dry for an extended period, which again, we're in the dry season, so it's not uncommon to see extended periods of dry weather, we could see an enhanced wildfire threat later this year. But I will say it has been cloudy, it has been cool, it has been wet so far this year. So overall, that has reduced our threat of wildfires up to this point.
Well, you mentioned cool. We had just the week that we're putting the show together here, a significant cool down early in the week. And what drives those forces? What's doing that?
That's all coming from up north. Our friends and neighbors to the north, those Arctic areas have high pressure that move down from North America because the sun angle's lower during the winter, so there's not as much heating. So naturally, these cold pools of air want to come at us from the north and west. And whenever we get a cold front to move through the area, that brings with it cooler than normal temperatures. Now, this winter, we haven't gotten too many. I know a lot of folks have been saying about how cloudy and cool it has been. Believe it or not, they're right. It's been cloudy. But temperatures, if you average it out over the past 3 months, mm-hmm. over the state as a whole, have been near normal. The key is the past 5 or 6 winters have been so warm that we think this winter has been chilly, but it really hasn't been. It's actually just been cooler than the past 5 or 6 years that we've been seeing, you know, warmer than normal conditions.
Go back to Christmas time a year past, darn cold, in the 20s over that long Christmas weekend, as I recall.
Yep, and that was last winter, a lot different than this winter.
And we're glad it is. Will Ulrich is with us. He is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, and we continue.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. That's 800-398-0651.
This boating season, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission wants to remind you to wear your life jacket. You make a difference in the life of your family. As a parent, it's your job to keep your kids safe and be there for them. You do it at home, at school, and you need to do it on the water as well. Always wear your life jacket and have your children wear theirs too. It's a basic step that saves lives. Life jackets save lives. Wear it, Florida. Visit myfwc.com for more information. That's myfwc.com.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. Growing up with a brother with autism, Sarah Crump witnessed firsthand how kids with disabilities felt left out by their peers. It's why at the age of 15, Sarah approached her cheerleading coach with an idea to include girls with disabilities on her school's cheer team. Well, what started out as an inclusive high school cheer team in a small town in Iowa has led to what is now known as Sparkle Effect, a thriving nonprofit with over 180 cheer teams across the United States, bringing students with and without disabilities together through cheerleading. The result? More confidence, higher grades, and better school attendance for kids with disabilities. And for those without a disability, new friends and a greater empathy. You want to learn more? Well, visit disabilitycampaign.org, where we have posted a link to the fabulous work known as The Sparkle Effect.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late. We stay informed. We invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Imagine. Imagine being denied an apartment because of your religion, or your race, or because you have children, or a disability.
It's so wrong.
Yes, but who has the power to stop this?
You do. Each of us has the power. The law is on your side. It's illegal for landlords to discriminate because of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or familial status. If you suspect that you have experienced housing discrimination, file a complaint with HUD immediately so we can investigate it. Fair housing is your right.
Use it.
To learn more, visit hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Or call 1-800-669-9777. 1-800-669-9777. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
I'm Bill Mick, along with Will Ulrich, who is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, as we take a look at Florida weather and everything that goes into it. I'm fascinated by the topic, and Will, I appreciate you taking the time and coming in.
Thanks, Bill.
Let's talk about the equipment that you use. Had to have changed through the years. Has to be as advanced as what we have now. What's involved in your daily look with the equipment you're using and what it does for you?
You know, we talked a little earlier about like how important it is to observe the weather before we try and forecast it, right?
Sure.
And that stays true in all facets of meteorology. It doesn't matter whether you're looking at long-term trends or short-term trends. As a meteorologist with the National Weather Service here in Melbourne and all of our surrounding offices, we're looking at short-term trends. What I mean by that, what's going to happen over the next couple of days out to maybe a week or two. But there are meteorologists who look out, you know, months and years. You know, we call those climatologists.
That and the Farmer's Almanac, but yeah.
Well, let's not go down that path, right? Take a look at how they did this winter. You'll be disappointed.
Exactly.
So, anyway, you know, in order to even try and tell you what's going to happen, we have to understand what's happening out there now.
Sure.
We have a couple of tools that are paramount to our ability to forecast the weather. One of the responsibilities of the Weather Service is to also observe and collect information, because you have to save that information so that we can look back in the past, right? We talked about analogs earlier. How do you know that something happened without observations? So a couple of tools that I can think of the top of my head. Satellite, geostationary and polar orbiting satellites have been a game changer, and they have only gotten better since the first was launched back in the 1960s. The ability to remote sense, in other words, they're not here on Earth sensing, they are either 600 miles above the surface of the Earth in the case of polar orbiting satellites, or geostationary satellites, which are 22,600 miles above our head. Those satellites are constantly taking pictures of Earth through visible sensors, in other words, the sun has to be out in order to take a picture of Earth, or infrared sensors, which they can detect temperature on Earth. So you don't need the sun to be out, because we can see clouds and land surface temperatures. That is a vital tool enabling us to get a big picture of what's going on planet Earth. But here locally, we can use radar. We have a weather radar. Anyone who's flown in and out of the Melbourne International Airport has probably seen what looks like a large golf ball sitting on a pedestal. That's our weather surveillance radar. We use that to scan the skies locally here in East Central Florida so that when there's showers and thunderstorms, we can issue severe thunderstorm warnings and tornado warnings. That's a paramount tool that we have in tandem with satellite that allow us to evaluate what's happening in our backyard. But what about what the air temperature is? You ever watch television and the meteorologist tells you it's 78 degrees out? Well, those are weather stations. And there have been a huge proliferation in the number of weather stations out there because everyone owns a weather station.
I've got a friend that has like two of them at his house.
Right. I have one. It's the cool thing nowadays, right, to know exactly what's going on in your backyard. We can thread all of these weather stations together to create what's known as a mesonet. And that mesonet allows us to get a good idea of what's happening at the surface. Because where are weather stations? They're where people live.
Sure.
That's at the surface. What's happening at 10,000 feet above our heads? 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, all the way to the top of our atmosphere. Where we live in the troposphere. That goes up to about 50,000 feet. So we need other tools to be able to study different portions of the atmosphere.
Has AI, I mean, it's a relatively recent advancement, and advancements happen every day. Artificial intelligence playing a role in what you guys do now at all?
What we try to do when we forecast the weather is try and estimate what the atmosphere is going to look like 1 hour from now, 1 minute from now, let alone 1 day, 1 week from now. And in order to do that, we use computers to do that forecasting.
Modeling,
which is just basically a fancy way of saying it's a bunch of equations that we use to try and forecast what's going to happen.
You're profiling weather like I used to profile drug dealers.
So the fact is, if we have better computer processing power that can run those equations out further in time and more accurately, of course it's going to benefit us.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to understand the mechanisms that go into the atmosphere. And where we are in the state of the science now, we can give you pretty accurate forecasts out 3, 5, in certain situations as much as 7 days into the future. But we haven't seen that much advancement, at least recently. Of course, in the past we have, in those longer range outlooks. But AI is certainly going to be a critical part of that, just like machine learning is as well.
Let's go ahead and transition it then into hurricane season, which is not that far off. And we see systems moving off of the coast of Africa, coming across the Atlantic, that are going to impact us one way or another. We may never see the storm. The ocean's going to bring us some impact. We'll see whatever happens as far as wave activity and the like. What goes into that kind of modeling? And when you're looking at letting folks know, you're a warning coordinator, and warnings are pretty important to us here along the east coast of Florida.
They are important and critical to the entire state of Florida, right?
Sure.
The west coast, the east coast. Look at what's happened in the past couple of years, right? Idalia up in the Big Bend region of Florida.
Oh, it's tough, yeah.
Hurricane Ian along our southwest coast. I mean, you know, that's going to forever change the landscape of southwest Florida. We have models that look at the entire globe. We have regional models that look at specific portions of the globe, and then we have mesoscale models, which look at even smaller parts of the planet. A global model might be useful in telling us where a hurricane, which is now just starting to develop off the west coast of Africa, might be 5, 7, 8, 9 days in the future. The regional and mesoscale models we'll be able to use with a little bit more precision and accuracy in order to tell us what does it mean for impacts for our community. So while global models look at global circulations, which ultimately impact where hurricanes are going to go, they're very good at telling us the direction and speed in which hurricanes are going to move, or whether the environment in which they're moving to is favorable for intensification. Those global models are a piece of the puzzle. But those smaller scale models are extremely useful to us once we know it's going to be a threat to the state of Florida. Those models will be able to give us a little bit more precision in terms of wind impacts, rainfall impacts, and even things like storm surge and tornadoes, which are a critical piece of the puzzle when it comes to hurricane hazards.
How difficult is it for you guys to come up with, okay, we've got a 3-day window here. This is what it looks like this is going to do. There are always factors at the last minute that move a storm. We thought we were going to be hit before, and it ends up staying offshore by 90 or 100 miles. We get some impact, we get some wind, we get some rain, some damage most certainly, but nothing like if we had an impact of the storm coming ashore. How confident can you be as you make those calls? And what does the time factor do in all of that with what's left there?
You know, to talk about that, I think we have to talk about the elephant in the room, which is that cone of uncertainty, that 5-day cone, which represents the best track of where we expect the hurricane to go. And again, the state of the science still doesn't allow us to know exactly where a storm system is going to go 5 days in advance, 3 days in advance, 1 day in advance. Believe it or not, the 5-day cone of uncertainty, which is issued by our parent organization, one of our national centers, the National Hurricane Center down in Miami, Florida. 1 day out, there is still an average error of exactly where the center of a system is going to go of approximately 50 to 75 miles.
And that's a big impact for who gets damaged. Absolutely.
That's a big difference, right? For us here in Melbourne, that's the distance between us and, say, Fort Pierce and Stewart, or to the north, you go, you know, getting closer to Daytona Beach. That makes a big difference. But hurricanes are not single points. They're large systems. So even if the center of the system doesn't impact you, you still have to be prepared for those peripheral effects like heavy rain and high winds. And so we tell people, try not to focus on that center line or the center of where the cone is pointed to, because hurricanes are not single points. They can be very large system. Think back to Hurricane Irma back in 2017. That system made landfall on the southwest Florida coast, but there were impacts across the entire state of Florida. Storms can come in small flavors, like Hurricane Charley, which was a very small storm back in 2014, or very large storm systems, a la Hurricane Floyd back in 2001, Hurricane Irma in 2017. Hurricanes are not single points, so just because you're not in the cone of uncertainty doesn't mean the threat is zero.
Charley, Francis, Jean, Ivan, 2004. It was horrendous as far. I can imagine you guys were pulling your hair out.
It is the 20-year anniversary this summer.
It is.
So
it's true.
It's a very good point that you bring that up, because Charley, Francis, think about Ivan. Ivan impacted the panhandle. Remember, we're talking to all our friends here in the state of Florida.
Right.
It was a horrendous season for us here in East Central Florida, because we had two back-to-back landfalling systems. Hurricane Francis and Hurricane Jean basically made landfall at the exact same location down in Hutchinson Island, down near Fort Pierce and Stewart. Mm-hmm. That was a hellacious season for us here in the state as a whole, when you look at all the different impacts from wind in the case of Hurricane Charley. Hurricane Charley produced a 100-mile-per-hour wind gust at Orlando International Airport before that sensor at the airport failed. Francis and Jean, incredible amounts of rainfall because of how slow they were moving. Ivan, storm surge along the panhandle. Each storm brings a different threat with it, and we have to remember that the next time we're impacted by one.
Back with more in moments on the Florida News Network.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels.
802-341-4542. 802-341-4542. That's 802-341-4542.
Drugs and alcohol have real effects on your ability to drive. In fact, last year, more than 800 people died in impaired driving crashes in Florida. DUIs are costly and you will lose your license. You may even face jail time. DUIs will stay on your record for 75 years. Driving while impaired has real consequences. Impairment is no illusion. Never drive impaired. Brought to you by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
It'll never happen to me. I'll never need help. That's what every boater thinks. But then one day, you do need help, and you have no way of getting it because you thought having an emergency locator beacon was unnecessary. You're wrong. Emergency locator beacons are effective, affordable, and they save lives. Seriously. If not for you, do it for them.
Learn more about emergency locator beacons at myfwc.com. Brought to you by the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
If your king or queen sago palms have been invaded by Asian cycad scale, it's time to fight back with organic Summit year-round spray oil. It kills Asian cycad scale and other insect pests. But Summit year-round spray oil contains no chemical toxins. Insects don't build up a resistance to this horticultural oil, so it keeps working every time you spray. Summit year-round spray oil is available at fine garden centers and at summitresponsiblesolutions.com.
Continuing with meteorologist Will Ulrich from the National Weather Service as we're talking Florida and weather on this edition of the Roundtable. Will, we were talking about hurricanes and important to us because we can have such severe impact from them. What about the folks that fly into those things? What kind of information are they giving you and how important is that during a storm?
It's a critical piece of the puzzle, right? Satellites play a role because they're able to take pictures of hurricanes from 622,600 miles above our heads. Radars can observe them when they approach coastlines, but there's nothing like sampling a storm from the inside. So that
did you ever want to go? There's almost a yes in that.
I have mixed feelings about it because would you believe that I still grip the sides of my seat like there's no tomorrow in air turbulence? So
sure,
I can't,
absolutely.
I can imagine what they go through. I've watched some of the videos. I'm sure you
right.
have too. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hurricane hunters provide us invaluable information. There's two sets of hurricane hunters out there too. NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, has a set of aircraft, P-3s and C-130s, that fly into hurricanes or above hurricanes. It's just as important to sample outside of hurricanes as well, right? As well as the 53rd Weather Reconnaissance folks out of the Air Force. They both have their own sets of hurricane hunter aircraft that goes and penetrates storms to understand what they look like from the inside. Because as much information as we get from satellite, as much information as we get from radar, we're still estimating using those tools what exactly is going on the inside. Hurricane hunters and those aircraft that fly into it, as well as the equipment that they drop out of those aircraft, allow us to get a 3D or internal structure of the storm. And that's invaluable when it goes into the computer models that we use to forecast what's going to happen.
Is any of that equipment reusable? I'm thinking no.
No. But let me tell you, we talk about advancements in AI. We talk about advancements in machine learning and stuff like that. But the advancements in drone technology, I think, have huge implications for the future as well.
I hadn't thought about that angle.
There
sure.
There are drones, both sea surface-based drones that fly near the surface, near the waves, and then also drones that can fly into storms. But they have to be strong enough to withstand the violent winds that occur inside of a hurricane. Well, there have been advancements that have allowed us to start sampling hurricanes using drones that we hadn't had just 5-10 years ago. And so as drone technology gets better and better, they can fly farther and they can fly in more violent conditions. I think that will have an important piece of the puzzle as well, because you'll be able to sample hurricanes more than ever before. C-130s and P-3 aircraft, you know, the Orion P-3, those are huge aircraft that take a long time to turn and only have so much fuel, just like drones, right? They only have so much battery power. But the two working together will give us new insights into hurricanes that we've never had before.
What goes into making the call? We've got a watch for this area. We've got a warning for this area. And you better get out of town.
National Hurricane Center coordinates with each of the National Weather Service forecast offices. Once they've developed their 5-day forecast or their 3-day cone, whichever cone you want to talk about, they look and see what are the potential impacts along the coastline. And from there, they issue tropical storm, hurricane, and storm surge watches and warnings. And they coordinate with us at the National Weather Service in Melbourne here for East Central Florida. But like I said, they're also talking to forecasters all throughout the state, Jacksonville, Tallahassee, Miami. Doesn't matter where the storm is expected to impact, there's a National Weather Service forecast office that coordinates with the Hurricane Center to look at the potential impacts and issue watches and warnings as they see fit. Watches are issued 48 hours in advance. Warnings are issued 36 hours in advance. Watch basically means, hey, heads up. Warning means it's time to implement your preparedness plans and think about evacuating if you're in one of those evacuation zones.
What about local officials coordinating with you guys as far as a mandatory evacuation when that's issued? What's the criteria there?
Sure. emergency management officials are our core partner at the National Weather Service. And here in East Central Florida, we work with 10 county emergency management officials right here in Brevard, Volusia, Orange, Lake, you name it. Every county's emergency management officials look at all of the information, and ultimately they are the ones to make the decision on evacuation calls, whether that's folks who live along the coastline or the barrier islands, or say they live along a long, large river, or whether that's potential evacuations for mobile and manufactured homes, which are also susceptible to high winds. They look at all the data that we provide them, and ultimately they make the decision on those evacuation notices.
You know, when that happens, we will go into coverage mode on these local radio stations across the state. And invariably, when we have impact from a storm, you get a call from somebody who refused to evacuate a barrier island, and they're stuck. Emergency officials aren't going to be able to respond to them as they might before that time. And you feel for people, but there's little you can do at that point.
Unfortunately, fire rescue police are not going to put themselves into harm's way just because you made a poor decision to stay in an evacuation zone. Why would they put their lives at risk at that point during a significant storm?
One of my first training officers when I was a policeman said, look, you got to take care of yourself or you can't take care of anybody else when it's needed.
So true.
We're going to wrap it up with Will Ulrich from the National Weather Service when we continue in just moments here on the Florida News Network.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-240-4587. 800-240-4587. That's 800-240-4587.
Drugs and alcohol have real effects on your ability to drive. In fact, last year, more than 800 people died in impaired driving crashes in Florida. DUIs are costly and you will lose your license. You may even face jail time. DUIs will stay on your record for 75 years. Driving while impaired has real consequences. Impairment is no illusion. Never drive impaired. Brought to you by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
Stop your grinding with Brooks Nygaard.
Are you waking up in the morning with a sore jaw, headaches, ringing in your ears, all because you're grinding and clenching your teeth at night? That's exactly what was going on with me. I ended up going to a dentist, and he wants to charge over $600 for a night guard. That's when I found the Brooks Night Guard. You mold it at home to the top or bottom teeth. Other mouth guards go all the way to the back, which allows the back teeth to touch. This is where most of the grinding and clenching occurs. The Brooks Night Guard redirects the bite force away from the back teeth, reducing jaw pain while still protecting the teeth. This unique design is what makes Brooks Night Guard different from all other traditional grind guards. Order your Brooks Night Guard today and get 10% off plus free shipping. Go to BrooksNightGuard.com and enter the code Brooks95. That's BRUX95.
Stop your grinding with Brooks Night Guard.
Shortness of breath. Patient's confused. Temp 102.
He just had an infection. What's going on?
He's becoming septic.
Antibiotics started. Bed ready. Let's move him.
Infections can lead to a deadly chain reaction in your body called sepsis. Very quickly, sepsis can cause tissue damage, organ failure, and even death. If you know the risks, can spot the symptoms, and act fast, then you can get ahead of sepsis. Learn more at cdc.gov/sepsis.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestrol.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Bringing this edition of the Florida Roundtable to conclusion with Will Ulrich, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. Will, let's talk about, in this final segment, being prepared for weather and considering safety. We have concerns, lightning, tornadoes, hurricanes. what do folks need to keep in mind as they consider weather here in the state of Florida?
We're coming out of dry season, severe weather season, right? The highest threat from tornadoes, hail, and wind in central Florida, and really the Florida Peninsula as a whole, really peaks this time of year. So it doesn't matter whether it's hurricane season. It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, November or January. We need to be weather prepared regardless of what Mother Nature is going to throw at us. So having a severe weather preparedness plan is an important piece of the puzzle. And that might vary over the course of a year, right? A tornado or severe weather preparedness plan might look a little bit different than a hurricane preparedness plan, because maybe your hurricane preparedness plan involves evacuating. So what are you going to take with you if you have to evacuate for a couple days? But say a tornado or a severe thunderstorm impacts your community, what might that look like? Well, that might be sheltering inside your closet or bathroom or interior room that provides you the greatest amount of protection from those violent winds occurring outside of the house. Wildfire season is another thing. What if you live in a community that is prone to wildfires? Things people might not think about here in the state of Florida, but wildfires happen. Think back to 1998. What would you and your family do if you had to leave quickly? Do you have an evacuation route in mind? Do you have things that you would be able to just put into a container, as well as your loved ones, into your car to get out of harm's way? Make severe weather preparedness a year-round activity for you and your family.
And timing for that evacuation call has got to be important. I was preparing to come into the studio during one hurricane season, and I was gassing up my truck on the way into work. Lady stopped. She says, I'm new to Florida. I don't know what to do. I said, look, we don't know yet where this thing's going, but there's a good chance that some of it's coming our way. If there's an evacuation order, ma'am, I suggest you go. I've lived here since 98. I would suggest you take off and go. And getting ahead of that rush so you're not stuck on the interstate when the storm comes through, that would be a big one.
Evacuation areas are predetermined areas that county officials have worked with National Weather Service officials to determine well in advance of a storm. So a key piece of the preparedness puzzle is to know and identify whether you are in an evacuation zone. We have a saying in the National Weather Service, run from the water, hide from the wind. Ever since 1992, Hurricane Andrew, most new construction homes in the state of Florida are built to a specific code mm-hmm. that will protect you from the violent winds of a hurricane, even a major hurricane like a Category 3. I understand there'd be a lot of fear if a Category 4 or Category 5 threatens your community, but understand building codes have gotten a lot better.
One's nothing to sneeze at, though.
No, one has wind speeds of 80 miles per hour. Would you want to ride that out in a bubble home?
No, thank you.
So evacuation routes, evacuation areas. If you are in an evacuation zone, make sure you know what zone that is. And then from there, where would you go in the unlikely event that an evacuation is called? Because it's not going to happen all the time, right? It's going to happen when the threat is significant to you and your loved ones. Mm-hmm. So why take a chance?
Very true. And rely on these local radio stations where you're picking up the Florida Roundtable today. They rely on the National Weather Service to bring you the information up to the minute at times with these storms when they're in play. Will Ulrich with the National Weather Service. Thank you, my friend. That was a great hour, and I appreciate the information. I feel educated today.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
All right. We'll have you back someday. That'll be fun. And you enjoy your week, and we'll see you next weekend on the Florida Roundtable right here on the Florida News Network.
You've been listening to the Florida Roundtable with Bill Meek, a news and public affairs presentation of the Florida News Network. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this station management, owners, or sponsors. For questions or concerns, contact Florida Roundtable at fnnonline.net.